Welcome to A Course in Miracles. I don't know how we're going to do this one tonight.
I'll help you.
Okay, you'll help. Good.
We're saved.
Hi, Andrew.
What was your name?
Mary.
Mary. Everyone, this is Mary.
Hi, Mary.
Mary, this is everyone. They all have different names and different stories. And they're wonderful. Oh, my goodness. How are we going to do this?
What paragraph are we on?
We'll go there in a minute.
Oh, okay.
All right. So, I don't know, there are beginnings, there's growth, there seems to be endings and death. In this world, in just logically, things come and go, right? Things come and go. But what of the spirit? What if the idea of spirit and love and eternal nature of God forever? How does forever fit with beginnings and endings? How does forever fit? How does eternal fit with your deep knowledge of the two-sided coin of life and death? We're so embedded with that idea that what lives must die. There's a whole thought system that says, well, it only lives because something else died to feed it. Very logical. Surely, in this world, at this level of the world, that's true. But what if the eternal nature of your spirit? What if this idea that God is eternal? We would have to reconcile that. We'd have to have a miracle. Which would deny the reality, quote, of ends, of death. Because if ending is, if death is, then this eternal is not. If death is true, eternal is not true. Fair enough? So you see, we do have something. We've got some differences here. That's what Course in Miracles says. Oh, thank God. It's simple. There's only two levels, and only one of them is real. It's only two levels. But boy, do we believe in the one we know, and the one we live by. And that's why I think we've all come here tonight. Say, wait a minute. I felt this love thing enter my mind somewhere along the way, and it had this infinite nature to it. And then this book supplies very carefully the eternal nature of you. It says, the book says, I know something about you you refuse to believe. And it's really good news. Okay, what? Tell me more. Make me feel it. Definitely. So, tonight, we're working through a section that is aptly named as, you know, sin as an adjustment. That you make adjustments with what you see and feel and think and witness in the world. You make adjustments so that you can still be sane and be happy.
Death could do that.
Yeah, that's right. Big adjustment.
Yeah.
Big law. It introduces a law, death does, a law that helps you to have some judgments, some finality, some decision making occurs, because death is a law here. Nobody gets out alive. So it's really helpful when you get your hands around the certainty of death. And of course, Miracle says, whoa, cowboy, that's fine if you know what you're doing. But you think you are something that dies. So you've got to slow down in what you think is true in the big picture. It's just fine if you know what you're doing. If you realize you're the dreamer of the dream of things that die, and it's a dream, the things that die, knock yourself out, have fun, dream it up all night long for 1,000 years. Go for it. We're here because in your zealous effort as a young creator, you've decided this is you. This is you. This thing that dies. That's, whoops. Whoa. That's not nice. And it's not true. So you've made, in the lack of that knowledge, okay, you've made adjustments so that you can carry this hope of eternal love, light, God, spirit, soul, whatever you want to call it, real joy, capital letter stop. You can carry that somehow and yet still have the pig die. See, Kenny says, I told you you shouldn't have named him. I told you 10 years ago you shouldn't have named that pig. And now it's so hard to let him go. Become a member of the family. Damn thing's got a personality. What? Our pets. Our children. Less so our parents, it turns out. For most people I end up talking to about death. But true too. People, anybody. And even things. Sometimes cars crashed, and why am I so sad that this car is gone? It's just, I'm embarrassed. It's a car. Okay, so loss has become a law. We call death as the ultimate loss, but it's all backed up in the rules of the separation world. Loss. You lose stuff. Tonight's paragraph, tonight's reading, is essentially going to call us out on that, on loss. Our choice for loss, Mario. You got it. Loss is basically, how's it working for you? He just wants you to get honest. Because if you're going to entertain the idea of no loss, you have to be willing to get into the space somehow. It's a trick of meditation is what it is. Get into the space of loss is impossible. Somehow you have to do that. Now that, of course, would be a spiritual identity and not a physical identity. All things physical lose. If it's physical, it loses. It gains, taking from someplace else. That's the laws here. And it loses. So we're really talking about you. Somehow, some way, visiting an identity where loss is impossible. If you can do that, each will define the other. Your identity will define the impossible loss, and if you just focus on impossible loss, you can define your identity. If you can touch on a spiritual identity, you'll know that loss is impossible. Can't do that? Go for loss is impossible and define a spiritual identity. Kind of works too that way. So let's spend a moment. I just want you to visit the idea, what would it be like if loss was impossible? What would it be like if loss was impossible? what would it be like if loss was impossible? There comes a point in your awakening where you start getting traction that what you think is becomes what you are. When you're asleep and you're fearful, what you think is still what you are, but you think you're a victim and you just saw it coming. As you awaken, what you think is what you are because you called it out, you made it so, because you're a creator. When you have a thought that is your life, nobody can have it for you. Before you take responsibility as a creator, there's a lot of victimhood going on, and haphazard thinking and worrying and backwards, upside down things. But as you start to wake up, things start to move kind of in the same direction. You understand all things are for your good. You start to take responsibility because you know you're responsible, because you can witness your own thoughts playing out as you thought them. You're not a victim. Whoa. How long has that been going on? Your whole life. You didn't see it. So now I'm asking you, what might it be like if you knew there was no loss?
I think that the moment that you doubt that you're not whole, you're not holy, you're losing your holiness, and even the chance that you're not going to live or your soul won't go on eternally. And if, I think that feeling of having that is a joyous feeling.
Beautifully said. That's right. You if you close the window, you close the light doesn't get in. And then you sit in the dark. And then you get dark. God, at least let the window be open, let the light come through. If you close, if you let loose, if you doubt your holiness, because you're such a powerful creator, then you will have a dark room. You're that powerful. Yeah. Bridget?
Yeah.
What would you be like if there was no loss? Is there any difference if somehow you knew there was no loss? Is there any difference?
Because there just wouldn't, there would be no need, no wanting. There's a perfection that you don't have to do or be anything. You don't have to keep looking for something.
Yeah.
Or trying to fulfill yourself with something if there's no loss and you've got everything.
There's no loss, you never lost. if there's no loss, you whatever state you're in is fulfilled.
Fulfilled.
Kenny? What would it be like?
Well, I'm going to change the word to eternal.
Okay.
Instead of loss.
All right. It, sure, it, that works.
It goes, right. Loss goes down and eternal goes different way. All I have to do would be to believe in a God, so I'm not there.
Yeah. It's kind of like what Bridget said, actually. Because in her explanation, she says, well, if there's no loss, then if you can find some kind of happiness, you keep it forever. There's no need to make it perfect. No need to worry you'll get less. because there's no loss. And if you don't need more, you're not going to lose what you have. So you can just, you can know eternity. Interesting. Julie.
The only thing that really came to me was a state of being. Just being.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that God is, and then we cease to speak.
Yeah, being.
Mm-hmm.
That's very fundamental. Yeah, again, back to how what Bridget started. Because if you accept your being, in any situation, in any certain circumstance, if you stay in the moment, you will find that you have everything that you can have. It's a lesson, is an actual workbook lesson, it brings you to this moment. It says nothing can be added to this moment. Wherever you are, whatever you are, whatever you're doing, there's nothing can be added to this moment. Some other moment in the future with a dream, you could win the lottery and buy a third house and so forth. But not now. Even if you won the lottery right now, you're still sitting on that cushion and those clothes wondering, how soon can I get out of here and spend it? Nothing changes in this moment. So if you recognize a wholeness that of being, wow, that's a very stable place to be. It's a wonderful meditation, by the way. Same with being in the present moment. To recognize that you can't actually have more or less in this exact moment. In this exact moment, you are. You can't change in this exact moment. You can't even die in any moment. Really. If you get really present, you can't live, you can't die. It's very freeing to be that focused and know that that's, well, now that's true. The rest you start to get, as you put in time, it gets all fantastical. So Course says that having and being are the same. Yo! Never heard that anyplace else. Whew. Stephen.
Well, my finely honed egoic strategy has been to wait for, expect, and try to anticipate loss.
Uh-huh.
And to do and be in a myriad of different ways someone who would avoid that.
Yeah.
Some of it's logical, some of it makes no sense at all.
Yeah.
But for God, just even a millisecond when I started to contemplate loss being impossible, it's like there was just that moment of the weight lifted, the clouds cleared. And it's like, well, that's what true freedom would be like. Like, sort of like that ultimate peace.
Yeah. Thank you. Yep. Like that. Did you all feel that?
Yes. Oh, gosh. I can't just add it to my
interesting. This is exactly what I was thinking about this morning when I was on my way to work, is the things that I'm attached to that create that separation between me and God that I don't want. And and that the only way not to have those attachments that create that sense of loss or the fear of loss in my life, are the only way to do that is to get in in touch with that sense of love, the true sense of love that's within me, that's the only act that I can open myself up to, is that connection of love. That is the only thing that I can do. That changes everything.
Yes.
It then, all of my wants and needs fall away.
Yes.
They're not important anymore. They have no meaning anymore. And I don't have to do anything to make them not have that meaning anymore. They just disappear. Because now I am who I am.
Yes, yes.
In that one true connection,
yes,
of love.
Yes.
Easier said than done.
Yes.
Because it is a spiritual plane. And
yes,
it's not easily maintained, because my story is so powerful.
Yes.
That I believe that I need to interject myself.
Yeah.
To have some sort of semblance of control over my world.
Yeah.
If I could let go of that,
yeah,
my own self,
yeah,
and just trust everything else.
Big word there, trust.
On,
underline that one.
On a very superficial level,
yeah,
I do trust.
Yes.
It's above that level that I think I need to control everything.
Yes. Yes.
So I can feel it.
Yes.
But then I also feel the weight of not trusting.
Indeed.
On top of that.
Honestly, that's how it is. Very good.
Yes.
Very good. Very good. So A Course in Miracles has a great way of looking at what you just said. And it is the key to this work that makes this possible, is that it's not a doing, but an undoing.
Yes. Oh, gosh.
That I can do. To undo means don't do what you're just about to do. That actually is possible. Even though you may not do it, and you're so habitually, you do your life so quickly, and your judgments and your worries and your thoughts all swarm in, you know you didn't have to. And if you still think you have to have any particular thought, do a meditation where you simply ask yourself, is it possible I could not have that thought? Whatever thought comes up. You know it is, because you didn't have it a minute ago. You bust yourself. And then the simplicity you're talking about becomes even more obvious. Mm. It's an undoing.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kim. Mario?
Yes. Okay, thank you. I'll just share something that I just kind of actually stepped into. Mm. And now, there's no coincidence that you brought this word, what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. And what's coming to me now is that I woke up to this age of 60 and I'm refusing it.
Mm.
And I just had a birthday on March 20th.
Okay.
And reversed everything. I turned 59.
Okay.
So my birthday, next spring I'll be 58. But see, but I also thought, what I found was being reborn. But, you know, wait a minute, did I read somewhere we could live up to 120? Okay, so I'm going to rewind it in a sense of like my new death, by my new baby. Well, I don't know. It's just no coincidence that I'm bringing this out.
Yeah,
I'm just feeling so alive by it. By just, wait a minute. There's no death here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in control of that.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, you are complete control of death.
Yes, thank you. It was just one of those things where...
More than you know.
Yeah. Oh, it's beyond. It's just this baby. It's like, wow, it's mine.
Yep.
Oh, sorry.
You don't have to apologize for joy.
No, it's just that it's just so brand new. It's just like, wow, I'm born into this whole new way of thinking. I'm not chasing that number thing.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
I have a... Okay, I feel like at this point, this is what... And when I say feel, that means I don't think it.
Mm-hmm.
What I think is probably not true ever.
Uh-huh.
So what I have come to is, it feels like none of this is real.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to lose anything when it's gone anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's no point in even worrying about loss.
Mm-hmm.
And the phenomena of living is just a phenomena. It's not something important.
Mm-hmm.
Except for helping me realize that I'm not of this world. I'm just passing through.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm coming to know that, well, the only thing I believe in is love. I know there's probably other aspects of God, but the aspect of God that is love is the only one I can even touch
mm-hmm.
on occasion. And so a loss for me would have been what you have reassured me twice now is not going to happen. And it is that all the ones that I love, mm-hmm. which is everyone,
mm-hmm.
Is going to be with me eternally.
Mm-hmm.
So I've lived long enough that I've lost a lot of things if you talk about this world.
Yeah.
But I've never really lost anything that is losable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Change is, I'm almost 80 years old, so
mm-hmm.
change is happen all the time, and
mm-hmm.
there's loss every day if you think about time.
Mm-hmm.
But there's not, like you said, there's no loss in the moment because all there is in the moment is love.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And all the things that you ever loved that you really cared for were because of you, not because of them.
And that's the hard part, is to know that when when my body eventually goes, I'm still going to be with all the love.
Yep.
And you said, love, when you're back with God, when we're back with God, love is to God.
Yeah.
It's all there together.
Yes.
And each one of us will just be loving each other all the time, and that feels like the only thing that I would care if I lost.
Right, right.
The only thing that I really would worry about would be that would not be true.
Course in Miracles says the one thing you can't lose is what you are in truth. And it says you are love.
And so, I believe this book absolutely. I don't understand it all the time. I certainly don't practice it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I just reviewed the lesson. I thought, I can't do that. It didn't fit for me. What they wanted me to do just didn't fit. It said, think about somebody who you have a gripe against and list all the things you have a gripe against about them. And then say, would you condemn yourself? And I say, I think the answer was no, but it would be yes for me.
Right.
If I were doing it, I wouldn't like myself.
Yeah.
I have a judgment against myself. But then I think it doesn't really matter whether I like it or don't like it, because that's not the issue here.
Yeah. It's a very, very direct exercise that is a gift to you when you finally let yourself read it.
I did read it, and I've tried it, and every time it comes up with, would you condemn yourself for that? I would say, if I were doing that, I probably would. Because I haven't given up judgment yet as much as I want to.
Exactly, you're on it. Good, good. Well, you just did the lesson for you this year. It will be a different lesson for you next time.
Well, that's nice.
But you need to be honest and see it as you see it.
Mm.
Yeah.
And that's how I see it.
So clever. Some of these lessons are so way beyond. It takes me all these years to get to see them and see it change and change and change and open like a flower, that lesson. Mm-hmm. That confused the hell out of me.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is it doesn't matter what the answer to that lesson is.
Well, there is no one answer to that lesson because it changes each year as you allow yourself to understand it. As you allow yourself to look at yourself, as you allow yourself to see how responsible you are for your own life.
Well, that's the other thing. When I find something in somebody that I'm judging and I don't like,
mm-hmm.
I say, okay, but you do that too, Luann.
Yeah. Yeah.
In fact, probably, and I don't know if it's true about them anyway, all I know is it's true about me.
But compassion gets born on this journey, on that lesson and all the others. One of the things that gets born in you will be a true compassion. not trying to be nice. You actually start to understand.
When?
When you start to get open to what everybody wants, and everybody's the same as you. They do it differently, but they're the same as you. You start to see, instead of all the differences, that all the sameness starts to crop up as you awaken. Mm-hmm. Compassion becomes really strong for all sorts of things that you would have just rejected before. And it's a very loving experience. Good, good, good. New girl?
She's not here. She was here a couple weeks ago.
I know, but I can't remember her name.
Mary.
Yeah. Mary.
It's a really hard name.
I know.
Just saying.
It's got an M and a Y. How many names have an M and a Y? Both.
Both. All it's like, of them.
Oh. Mary.
Well, when you first started talking about loss, I thought you were equating it with death. Mm-hmm. And I started, I'm a hospice volunteer, so I'm associated with people's death a lot. And I've never yet been with somebody who was resisting. Mm. It's like they're so close by the time I come along.
Yeah.
They're so close to it that one man said recently, oh, I just want to go home. Mm-hmm. Which is a common phrase that people use about the idea of I'm ready to move on to the next, to what's coming next. I never heard anybody say, well, I'm ready to get in a hole in the ground.
Yeah,
I never heard anybody say that.
Interesting.
Yeah. Don't get me, buds.
And then I was thinking it's kind of a paradox. We're going to, I don't even really want to use the word lose. We're going to depart from this life. Mm-hmm. And at the same time that that's happening, we're entering this other spiritual dimension. Mm-hmm. It's like, mm-hmm. And that seems like a fine thing.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. A fine thing.
And I know someone who's telling me, well, you know, we get older and then we get sick and then we get injured and then we die. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, wow, that's, you know, that belief. But it's something about getting ready to die. And I think, oh, wow. I'm ready to die, but I'm not dead, so I'm going to, you know, practice my piano lesson. So, it's a good topic. I think I feel that strongly.
Yes.
And also, it's not this idea that everybody that's ever died that we knew, we're just dying to see again.
Uh-huh.
For, you know, eager.
Yeah, true too. No. Uh-huh. Yeah, there's some.
But
yeah,
right. Then if they're in some spiritual form, and they've left their the things that gave them pain.
Uh-huh. Yep.
They've left that behind.
Uh-huh.
So they're in a spiritual form. So that's fine.
And that they had also gone through the transition of no loss, and that changed them.
Yeah.
Potentially, a lot of things change when you get away from this loss environment. Yes.
Well, and for a lot of people, it's a gain. To shed the body that is clearly ready to go.
You're right. Especially when you get that to that edge.
Yeah.
To that end. And Julie's also a hospice worker. And there's this inevitability, a surrender maybe. It's just there's not a there's no fight. There's no fight.
There's a readiness.
Yeah.
It's time, you know. if they weren't on morphine, I'm not sure just how they would be talking, yeah. But since yeah. they tend to be,
yeah.
They're very accepting, and they're very loving.
Yeah.
They, you know, they want to be yeah. close to me, and they're going to depart.
In my experience, you get this phrase. You guys get this also. There's, I can feel it coming. Hmm. Have you heard your patients say that? Anybody hear your parents say that? I can feel it coming. This one woman was describing this to me, and you know, that was 10 years ago. My dad talked about it, and he said, I can feel it coming. It was about 3 years before he left. So there was a peace that began to arrive, even though the body had its difficulties along the way. There was a peace gift that was coming, saying, you know what, this is inevitable, so get over it. I'm over it. What happens, it happens. It happens. And my dad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the loss aspect was just disappearing. And the excitement aspect was picking up. The inevitable, Anthony DeMello says, that enlightenment is to accept or to trust. He uses a stronger word even than that. The inevitable.
Well, see, this way I... the word loss doesn't really apply to the part of it that I'm thinking about. It's because it's the end of, you know, of this life
yep.
is coming.
Yeah.
But it may be a loss to some people that are to it, you know, that are attached. Some other people that are attached
yeah.
to that person
yeah.
may experience that. But how yeah. could even they wish that this person, and they. Condition they're in
uh-huh. yeah,
right. to be here any longer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah. So just, you know, enjoy them as people that are already
yeah,
in well, spiritual.
Yeah, there's a way of looking at it too as a transition rather than an end.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are and you're transitioning, you're busy. It's like getting off one subway, get onto the other. You don't miss the old subway. You just need to get into the right one before the door closes. In a big city, you know, oh, go, there it is. The right one, mm-hmm. I'm on it. I'm not missing the old one. Yeah. Brother John.
So, like? The question is, the concept of no loss whatsoever?
Yeah.
Okay. The way I sort of put it together is that, so if you're not losing ever anything,
yeah,
everything you would have lost is going to build up.
Yeah,
it's going to build up. So therefore, that translates into ultimate gain.
Yeah, huh.
Unlimited.
Yes,
infinite gain.
Yes,
because there's no loss. Then what would have been lost, which
nice.
Is imaginary,
nice. Yeah,
turns out to be unlimited gain.
Nice,
and. That's a physical
yeah.
kind of explanation.
Sure.
It's just sort of like an example
yeah.
of how spirituality might be thought of.
Yes, because you're still alive, you know, so to speak. You're moving with your mind, and every movement, if it's not loss, it's gain.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, it's all gain.
Right. It's all
every
good.
Every movement.
It's all good, no matter what.
It's all good, no matter what.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I've had that feeling.
Nice enough. Nice
before.
Enough. Yeah.
Before. You know, I know very few and far between moments of just the taste, the bare taste of the glint of the beauty of spiritual enlightenment.
Yes.
And at one of those moments, I realized that everything is for the good.
Yeah. There it is.
It's all good.
There it is.
And
uh-huh.
And it's beautiful.
Yes.
And that idea in its way.
Nicely said.
I forgot to say, eternal non-loss means for me no fear.
No fear.
And if there's no fear, then all that is left is love.
Hello. Nice. Yeah. Nice math right there.
So, I mean, that's what I'm. So, having this book and reading it as slow as I am doing,
yeah.
We won't comment about how long it's taking me to get through this book.
Don't rush it.
I can't. I 4 or 5 hours to do each section. And I don't have that much memory base, so sometimes it takes me 3 or 4 or 5 days.
Yep.
But with no fear and knowing only love, then if I don't have any loss, and this book is just the thing what John was saying, is only gain for me, which is why I love coming here. Because it feels like it's only gain. I don't lose anything by what I am, and I don't even want to say learning. I want to say what I am feeling through this book.
Yeah, it's what we seek.
Yeah.
There's no coincidence that I just found something that's definitely what I was trying to say, but it's actually, can I just read this paragraph?
Sure.
Very simply, the resurrection is the overcoming of surmounting of death. It is the reawakening or a rebirth, a change of mind about the meaning of the world. It is the acceptance of the Holy Spirit, interpretation of the world's purpose, and acceptance of anointment for oneself. It is the end of the dream of the misery and the gladness of awareness of the Holy Spirit's final dream. Anyway, I could keep going on with this.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Where I'm at. Rebirth.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I was just like, wait a minute. Okay, it's what we seek. Yeah. And here it is. Yeah. It reconfirms why I'm here.
Nice.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Everybody.
What would it be like if there was no loss?
Well, it's something that I can't really imagine believing because I'm still here in a body.
Yeah.
But what happens, you go, all of a sudden, well, if there's nothing, then all of a sudden there's this fear. Then if there is a loss, I can lose my body. I can lose the ego. I can lose all this fear. Matter of fact, the whole freaking dream. So it's like, because that's all gone, but I really can't imagine it, but I know I'm going that direction because I'm so much more peaceful and happy. And love seems to be, all that seems to be easier.
See, right there, you'll see, the book is telling you this 100 times if it says it once, but you're going to see it. Right there, you allowed loss to be real. And it says, you are free of limit.
What does happen when you get rid of all that stuff you don't need, what happens? I start looking for something to get rid of.
Yes, well,
so I'm like,
yes,
I'm gonna get rid of it. So I go, oh, this, I'm getting rid of this, and this.
Yes, yes,
so
yes.
I'm like, this is really cool. It's like, I can get rid of all this stuff.
Yes.
Or all these ideas, these things, they're all gonna get to go away. And
you also get,
that helps to speed it up.
You also get to dream this dream again.
Mm-hmm. Differently.
And again. And again. If that's what you want. You are free of limit. Mm-hmm. You will not lose this dream of having a body and kids and dogs, and if that's what you want, who's to say you can't do that? Wait a minute. What happened to you being an extension of God, unlimited? If I want to make a movie about a horror movie, I'll make a horror movie. That's right. Want to make a movie about lilies and love and forgiveness and flowers? Then, okay, nothing's stopping you. Really, unlimited. Remember? You're free of limit. You, as a creator, as extension of God, which is you are in your true being, you are free of limit. Here you've chosen limits so that you can have this unique experience of being alone. And you've done a very good job. It's real, but it's not true. So the minute you think differently, you'll have that. It's good though. I like that. I like that clarity. Very good.
Could you describe, I feel like we've talked before about loss being like, I don't know exactly how it's been said, but like sort of not just the idea of physically losing something or someone, but like anger or frustration or victimhood. Like it would help me to hear like a refresher on like what loss really entails, like how deep the rabbit hole goes, like that it's not goes, that it's not like just
the essence of loss for A Course in Miracles is another word it uses is a 4-letter word, lack. Mm-hmm. that you something you should have or would be helpful or nice to have that you want can be taken away.
Well, the greatest loss you could ever have is your ego. Because that is what is creating everything. That is what's blocking everything to that other plane that we go to when we lose our bodies. I cannot wait to get to that level. I would love to be able to experience that fullness while I'm still in my body, but realistically, I can only have, I only can believe at this point that I can get glimpses of it, but I don't know that I'll ever, while I'm in this body, be able to really have some extended period of time where I am in that state of bliss and my ego is not controlling everything else.
Yes, yes.
And I'm...
You don't have to stay in that.
That makes me a little bit sad, a little bit angry.
Well, you know what? The Course just lets you off the hook here. You don't have to stay in that state for it to be true. You don't have to stay in that state for any amount of time for it to be true. Like the book says... Well, now I'm adding words to what the book says. But... when you recognize the truth, because you are surrounded by falsity in every direction, it will be like the wakes behind a boat. The boat makes a wake in the water, and you see it for a while, but then you kind of, it's gone. Mm-hmm. But you know you saw it. And I've used this analogy also for light in a dark room. Once you've seen the light, you can never take that idea away. Even if the room goes completely dark again, whoa, did you see that little spark in the corner? Mm-hmm. It's now true for you, the light. Mm-hmm. All you need is a glimpse of this, and then the short this dream of time that you're having can play its way out, but the awakening has occurred. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to keep it for any duration of time to make it true, but you do have to see it. Mm-hmm. Like John was beautifully describing. Mm-hmm. You have to see it even just for a moment and get that freedom feeling that you had and that you had it. And that openness, you say, oh, geez, now that would be freedom. Mm-hmm. And it is freedom. And there's no question. It has dawned on you. Forever. Even though you may deny it, it's now true. Forever. See? This is the good news. I'll show you a couple of passages that talk about that, and we'll go back there someday.
One of the lessons I'm on recently said, put down all the things that bother you. Mm-hmm. In other words, look at your ego. Mm-hmm. I got the impression you cannot release what's keeping you tangled up in your ego unless you know what you're tangled up in.
That's correct.
So I call that what triggers me. Mm-hmm. And I started making a list of all the stuff that triggers me. Mm-hmm. And there's something freeing just about knowing what they are. Because then when I stay awake, and you say, oh, that's something that triggers me, and I don't have to do anything with it, just recognize it and move on.
It's so true. Isn't that the beginning of the addiction process, is to look at that you're addicted?
Thank you, Luann.
Yes. And the essence of the forgiveness process is the same thing. Take a look and see, hold up honestly, what it is that you would forgive. What is it that seems like a problem? You look at it honestly. Have a Holy Spirit say, Holy Spirit, show me this problem differently. I don't know what the answer is. I don't know what the problem is. I know how it's ever going to solve, if ever. But you've begun by looking at it. And already 90% of the work is done.
I just try to be patient until I get to the other side. I don't try to figure them out. Well, that's not entirely true. I
a part of me will still, because I've always tried to figure out the problem.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I don't put as much effort into it as I used to, because I know I just have to be patient and just get through to the other
side. That's right. It's coming.
Because it's just not important anyway.
It won't last.
It doesn't matter.
None of these problems. Yep. Doesn't matter. And it won't last. Nothing here lasts. That's nothing here matters. You can wait it out. It's true. It's true. So a lot of people on their deathbed, they've waited out a lot of stuff. And you just ignore it. And they get to their deathbed and they go, what? It doesn't matter.
So many times I'll think, God, I wish I would have had the problems that I had when I was 30.
Yeah.
You know, but at the time I was 30, the problems I had were awful.
Yeah.
But they don't feel awful
right
anymore, because I have a whole new set that feel completely different. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They all fall into perspective. When you can step back from them and see how problems actually occur with a victim and a victimizer, one chasing the other, one defending from the first one. The defense makes the first one seem worse than it was. Oh my God. Okay, let's bust the ego a bit on that. Everybody turn to page 429.
Can I just say one more thing?
Yeah.
Oh.
What sustains me every time I look at an egoic thing that has triggered me?
Yes.
What sustains me is that God thinks I'm innocent.
Yeah.
God knows I'm innocent.
Yeah.
God thinks of me as innocent.
Yeah.
And so I look at a trigger and say, well, okay, but that doesn't mean there's anything wrong with me.
There you go. Nice. Very nice, Linda. That's a nice gift. That's love. That's love to you.
Oh, beautiful. I have to say that a lot when I'm judging.
Sometimes you do.
Well, so when I went through this last thing with the euthanizing, mm-hmm. and you said, you know, I've read it. We made it up. This is the illusion. I've made this up.
Yes.
Created it.
Yes.
And to hold on to that was like the lifesaver, you know, on a boat that you're, I had to be so vigilant, otherwise I would lose it emotionally.
Yeah.
To the ego, the shoulda, coulda, wouldas were just like flood it right there, just right there. And I had to just stay so vigilant to, do I want to create, am I want to create this? No, I want to stay here and be at peace. I want to be at peace. I can create this peaceful, or I can go down with the ego, you know, all these different, why didn't you do this? Why you could have done, you know, it was just like right there.
Yeah.
And the vigilance of not want mind wandering.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah.
It would just like that quick, said. I could tear up and it'd be like,
yes.
And it would be back, you know, okay, choose peace. Choose
then you would peace. Live the teared up nightmare, or you could choose peace in the moment and get honest.
Yeah.
Nicely done.
But it was just like that vigilance of like, no, I'm choosing peace.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and just be and
all the habits of mind are ready to weigh in and say things to you that you'd rather not think.
Yeah, they're so familiar, but it was, and it was very empowering to be able to have those moments of that peace.
Nice.
Versus the other, I knew where that was going. I've been down that road so many times, it's just like, you know, rip you a new one.
It would, yeah.
Yeah.
It just like, everything gets heavy, and the tears come, and you start thinking about your tears, and then you think, well, it must be really bad, and the cycle just chases its tail.
So it's that choice about, do you want to see the eternity of things, or you want to see, you know.
Just like that, you were right there on the edge. The razor's edge, it's for razor's edge for a good reason. That is the razor's edge. And you decided to walk it. You did. That's walking the razor's edge.
Well, and the empowerment, I mean, you use the word. Mm-hmm. But once you realize, like that, for me, it's like when I realized I was capable of that, and then, like, that a thought is literally just a thought.
Uh-huh.
Like, it's a thought is hugely powerful because it will make the world however you want it. But it's also just the fact that it's just a thought that I can like change at any moment, like I'm hearing that.
Yes.
And it's so life changing when you have that moment, you know, just realizing like I felt better, peace, whatever, because I changed my mind. Like, that's huge.
It's huge. And then that's the life you lived. Mm-hmm. Imagine your whole life could be lived just that way.
Yeah, because you just gained a part of yourself. Mm-hmm. You had courage to be vigilant and stick to the path that you knew was the path you wanted, the outcome you wanted. Mm-hmm. And then you go through those things,
yes.
And that's what builds us and gives us our identity. Without our identity, we're lost.
Yes.
I have a little bit of a disagreement. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's because I'm a psychologist, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But what I do know that is when I'm crying, I feel like I'm in my truth, because the tears come from something that I am believing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I find my triggers a lot. If I go as deep as I can, what is a thought is a thought, yes, but it might not be the deepest thing that what you're thinking is about. And I like to go down and find the deepest thing and say, that's what I'm afraid of. That's why I'm triggered by that.
Well, sometimes in situations like this, the euthanasia decision was not a 15-minute episode. Mm-hmm. It was something where she was crying, and then not crying, and then mm-hmm. planning, and then going back to crying, and mm-hmm. confused, and tormented. And then she decided, you know, I'm going to look at this differently now.
Mm-hmm. So it was that you explored.
The belief of knowing that there is, that I am spirit. We are spirit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what, instead of going back to the physical and the death, and now we're spirit, we live on. This mm-hmm. is not the end. You know, that's where it was mm-hmm. played in there as well. And I chose spirit to really stick with. This isn't, I mean, his body will be in the ground, but he'll use him somewhere else.
You can't kill spirit by killing a body.
You can't kill spirit. You can't kill
spirit. You can't kill spirit.
And that's what it was like, a mantra. You can't kill spirit. He's good. He's good. I'm good. We're all good.
Yeah.
But that's the thought. But I also believe you could get that from knowing that all you have to do is open your mind and his spirit is still with you. For me, that's how I know spirit.
Well, the point of the body, you guys are saying the same thing. The point is, don't go into some kind of denial.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She's saying, go mm-hmm. and don't go into denial, cry mm-hmm. your tears. She's saying, I'm going to go into awareness in this current moment, and I'm going to stay in the truth. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, the truth will set you free when you're aware of it. You can feel it. You can feel what freedom is like. Stay free. Mm-hmm. Then you're free for that time.
And it felt like a gift.
Nice.
You know, it was a gift from him as well to give me that opportunity. Hugely. To experience it in a different way instead of the grief. You know, yeah, there's a grievance, but rose to a different level of thankfulness. Thank you for allowing this relationship and that.
Yes.
Allowed me to look at where I'm at.
Yes. And
I can't even put it's
a miracle.
You're saying it perfectly. Yeah. And then to be able to receive the gift that's offered mm-hmm. from what would be a tragic situation, what would be a loss, is now a gain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that would take you being open to receive the gift. Beautifully.
And that's why I would cry, was that it was such a gift.
It's beautiful.
You know, it was just like,
complete embrace. That's a whole different set of tears. Whole different reason to cry there.
Exactly.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah. Yeah. Good. Good. Okay. Page 429. So I'm dedicated to read a paragraph at least.
But wait.
That's my job. 429, paragraph 4.
Okay. A simple question yet remains and needs an answer. Do you like what you have made? A world of murder and attack through which you thread your timid way through constant dangers, alone and frightened, hoping at most that death will wait a little longer before it overtakes you and you disappear. You made this up.
Yeah, you made this up.
It is a picture of what you think you are, of how you see yourself. A murderer is frightened, and those who kill fear death. All of these are but fearful thoughts of those who would adjust themselves to a world made fearful by their adjustments. And they look out in sorrow from what is sad within and see the sadness here.
Self-fulfilling prophecy, can you see the circle?
You think of projection?
Yes.
Okay.
They look out, they project out in sorrow from what is sad within, and they see the sadness projected out and think that the sadness is looking back at them.
Confirming their worst suspicions.
Confirming their worst suspicions. Well, hey, you saw it. You saw it in sentence three. You made this up. All italicized. You know why that's so significant? Because it's the secret to salvation in this book, is you made this up. It's the secret to salvation. Let's go read it real quick. Turn to 586 or 7. 586. I think it's 587. It's 587. Paragraph 10. Bottom of the page. And Mark, would you read that for us?
Sure. Secret of salvation is but this.
Okay, here it comes. If you wanted to be saved, he's going to tell you the secret of salvation that the world and nobody else can make any sense of, but he just printed it out for you, and Mark's going to read it. Okay, go ahead.
That you are doing this unto yourself.
Oh. We found the problem, and yeah, it's us.
No matter what the form of the attack, it still is true. Whoever takes the role of enemy and of attacker still is this, the truth. Whatever seems to be the cause of any pain or suffering you feel, this is still true. For you would not react at all to figures in a dream you know that you were dreaming. Let them be as hateful and as vicious as they may. They could have no effect on you unless you failed to recognize it as your dream.
I mean, come on. Right there, black and white.
Yeah, really?
If he's just calling out, he says, you know what we're really talking about here? You're doing this to, I know, he says. Jesus says, look, I've woken up. I've seen this whole dreaming thing for what it is. And you're actually dreaming up the things you're afraid of. And you would not be afraid of them. You see that you did that. You made that. That's you in the mirror that's moving. Get it? You're not afraid of the thing in the mirror moving because you know that you're moving. Okay. Even if you tried to punch the mirror, you're not going to duck, are you? That's what he's saying.
You know, it's pretty obvious if you think of it this way. You walk down the streets, and I smile at almost everybody, and hopefully they'll smile back, but if they don't. But there's some people you can walk down the streets and see, and you could say to yourself, those people, that person is dangerous. And he looks this way, he's got a grouch on his face, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes you afraid of him, because you think that. And so when I say to myself, well, you know what, I'm just thinking that, so... Who cares how he looks?
That's taking responsibility.
Yeah.
It comes from inside. Turn to workbook page 119. Workbook 119, paragraph 1.
Page, not lesson.
Thank you. Page 119 in the workbook. Oops. 5/8 of the way through the book in the back. So you go 400 pages to the right, Mary. Yeah.
Lesson 70?
It's lesson 70. Lesson 70 on page 119 in the workbook.
At the top of it, I wrote, salvation. You can give it up as easy as you made it up.
Amen, sister.
Oh, wow.
That's a quote. Bridget, read for us paragraph 1.
All temptation.
Wait, what is the title of the paragraph?
Oh. My salvation comes from me.
Whoa, just like that. It said it in the text, you know, 300 pages earlier. Here it comes again.
And again and again.
Hold on a second. Oh, there's so many pages in this book, I tell you.
Still looking for John to do the page notes. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it was it kind of smooth? It started working there, you know. We started had a rhythm going. Yeah. Okay, rocket.
We're all here. My salvation comes from me. All temptation is nothing more than some form of the basic temptation not to believe the idea for today. Salvation seems to come from anywhere except from you. So too does the source of guilt. You see neither guilt nor salvation as in your own mind and nowhere else. When you realize that all guilt is solely an invention of your own mind, you also realize that guilt and salvation must be in the same place. In understanding this, you are saved.
You see the circle she's describing. When you realize that all guilt... Wait, who's talking? We're talking about salvation here. No, think about this too. When you realize that all guilt is solely an invention of your mind, well, you also realize that guilt and salvation must be in the same place. You can give it up as easy as you made up. Were it true that there was no loss, how free would you be?
Yeah. So I have an issue with people pleasing.
Okay. Yes.
I tend to be one. I was frustrated all day because I can't win with this person. I just can't
yes.
win with them, no matter what I do.
Yes.
And I... There was this underlying irritation, like, all day. But I kept... I knew I, like... My spirit knew that this is not... Like, don't give it energy. Don't focus on it because it's not... Like, it's not... worth my peace and it's not real. But you know, you're sort of around somebody, right? Mm-hmm. Ongoing throughout the day. Mm-hmm. And there's just this, you know, they're upset with you and so you're feeling that. Mm-hmm. And so I felt like I was halfway there, you know. It was like I could acknowledge that it wasn't real, but I couldn't turn off like the chemicals
yes.
that were going on
yes,
in my body.
Yes, yes.
And it's like, I don't know, it's just frustrating. But I'm
good catch.
That's for reading all of this. I'm like, oh,
yes,
I know.
Yes.
It could have been different if I could just like, I don't know. Sometimes
yes.
it's hard to interrupt patterns.
This is what it's like walking up to a door but not going through it. Seeing door A, so you know what? Door A is my freedom. And you walk up and you see it says, to see door, D-O-O-R-A. A! I've heard this is where my freedom is. And yet turning on your heel and saying, well, I'm busy with door B, I'm going to go for door B. So frustrating. You were so close. There's only two doors. So, but this is great because you're so close. You know how you've never been close before. How many times are you just angry, you can't see your way through it? No Course in Miracles. The hell, whatever that blue book says, I got a problem. And it's crushing me. And the book was nowhere in sight. Your freedom was nowhere in sight. Loss was more real than love. How far were you from door A? But not in that moment. You're actually pretty damn close. Because
yeah.
you could at least say there is another way. Even though I am still fretting and frighting,
yeah.
there is another way. That is closer than you think.
Mm-hmm.
Because all you need is a breath at that point that you didn't take. One breath that you didn't take is all that you needed. The vigilance. That you walked on the line. That's razor's edge walking means that you're vigilant. And you don't follow that attachment to loss. You don't follow it. And like you said,
well, so you mentioned, you know, like, obviously there was some chemistry going on there, too, where you want, you know, there was this, like, grief that would rise. For me, I did take a breath once or twice because there was multiple interactions throughout the day, and I was like, Holy Spirit, help me here.
Uh-huh.
But But it was the body's chemistry that, like, you know, it was like that. Just I allowed that to hold power.
Yes.
And you described a situation where obviously, like, the sad chemicals were flowing, but you were able to, not have them hold sway. Yeah.
And we have to recognize that, you know, what we're talking about here, these are nanoseconds. They're milliseconds, really, not nanoseconds. They are milliseconds, which is 1,000 nanoseconds, okay? It's actually a lot longer than you think. However, you 4, 5, 6, 7 milliseconds go by and the chemicals start to flow. And now you're feeling something that you're trying not to think.
Yeah.
But you know...
Right? So now that lesson...
For way longer than nanoseconds. You
got 20 minutes before your body, your blood pushes it through the system and rinses it out. And that's if you actually stopped. It's like climate warming. If we actually stopped, it's still going to be 50 or 300 years or whatever to the problem's over. If you stopped, right? Because in the blood system, and this is the way the material world works, and with momentum, okay? But the duration of these things shortens. Doesn't it, everybody who's caught yourself early? Mm-hmm. Doesn't the duration it's not as bad as it was before? That's because you're down to nanoseconds instead of milliseconds, or 2 milliseconds instead of 10 mil, or 1,000 milliseconds, a full second of worrying. Pumping that adrenaline, pumping the cortisol, pumping the norepinephrine into your body, and it does what it does with that stuff. Because you said, I want fear, I want worry, and I want loss, and I'm going to squeeze some of these juices into my blood so I can feel it. That's what I want, body. Now do it. The body says, okay, boss.
Absolutely. And that's why I've decided, if I don't feel good about something, that means I'm doing something wrong.
Right.
And so... my daughter, I love her. Mm-hmm. It is wonderful that I love her, and I cannot win anything with her. Mm-hmm. Her mind is so much better about analyzing things than mine, so I never win anything.
Yeah.
And I finally figured out that I don't need to win.
Mm-hmm.
All I need to do is love her, and then I try to apply that to other people.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm saying I love people, then I don't need to win with them.
Yep.
And that feels so good to just give it up.
Would you rather be happy or would you rather be right?
Yeah. I'd rather be happy. And being right doesn't work for me.
If you win with them, you can be right, but you won't be happy. Well, because you crushed them. You know what? I'm really right and you're really wrong, and I want you to admit it.
No, I don't be happy, but I don't feel good about it.
Feel better.
I don't feel good about it.
The truth is spoken, right? You don't feel good about it.
I don't feel
good. Not loving, is it?
Not
understanding is the opposite of compassion. Let's look at one more paragraph on the vein of this, on Workbook 162, paragraph 7. Workbook 162, paragraph 7. It says workbook at the top of the page, but if you want to say look for lessons, you can too.
Is it 162 or is it the page 162?
It's page 162 in the workbook. It has a lesson number, but it won't be helpful.
Did you say paragraph?
Are the lessons in the workbook to you? Does that make sense?
They're always lessons. I hear workbook and I have to translate it.
Right.
I hear lessons and I know what it is.
Okay, who's up to read?
I'll pass.
Kenny.
Where are we at?
Tell we're in paragraph 7.
This one?
Top of the page.
Yeah, salvation.
Yeah, salvation.
Requires the acceptance of but one thought.
Here it is. It's so simple. It's one thought. Kenny's going to tell us one thought.
Now you got to read the thought.
He's going to tell us. This is it. It's just one thought. You can do it. All right, let's have it.
You are as God created you, not what you made of yourself.
That's it.
Wherever evil you may think, or is that whatever? Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. Evil you may think, whatever. think you did, you are as God created you. Without ever mistakes you made, the truth about you is unchanged. Creation is eternal and unalterable. Your sinlessness is guaranteed by God. Sinlessness.
Mm-hmm.
You are and will forever be exactly as you were created. Light and joy and peace abide in you because God put them here.
Light and joy and peace abide in you because God put them there. You admit it.
And I love your sinlessness is guaranteed by God because that means to me I'm innocent.
Yes.
And just hearing that from God, about God, makes me feel so good.
It's the
I
truth.
Know that no matter what I do,
yes,
I'm not being judged.
Yes.
Yes. And that's what I want to stop doing is judging.
That's also the way of saying the second coming of Christ is understanding that you are innocent.
Yeah.
And God knows you as innocent. The truth knows you as innocent. And you've had this dream of guilt and all sorts of problems, and none of them were true and don't last.
Yeah.
Take a breath. Take an easy breath.
When I say that to my clients, you're innocent, mm-hmm. they can take a breath.
Nice. They're teaching you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Beautiful. Good, good. Okay, back to tonight's reading real quick. We got a couple of minutes. Page 429. All right, so a simple question yet remains and needs an answer. Do you like what you have made? What we're talking about is moving off of your addiction. Do you like being a drunk that wakes up and vomit every morning? With no job and pissed off family members just trying to help you. You like that. If you like it, keep drinking. Keep egoing. If you like the way that anger makes you feel. If you like the way you feel with a bunch of fear and attack, keep it up. He says, get honest. Do you like the world you've made? A world of murder and attack through which you thread your timid way through constant danger, alone and frightened, hoping at most that death will wait a little longer before it overtakes you and you disappear. Remember that country song? Everybody want to go to heaven. Nobody want to go right now.
I miss that one.
Some of your people do, huh?
He says, look, you made this up. It's a picture of what you think you are, of how you see yourself. What? Yes, this world is a picture of what you think you are and how you see yourself. But there it is in one sentence. There's a complete understanding of what's going on right now. Of Course in Miracles says if you want to know what you believe, just open your eyes. That's you believing. You're powerful. You're way powerful. And you're innocent. You're a little misguided because you pushed away love, the only thing you really want. Wow. There it is in one sentence. It's a picture of what you think you are, how you see yourself. He says, look, a murderer is frightened, even though they're murdering. And those who kill fear death. It's just a law. If they're using death, they believe in death. Therefore, it has the same effect on them. They're not immune because you wield that power. All right, let's jump real quick because we don't talk about this much and it's come up tonight a couple of times. Jump to page 496. Let's see how much of this we can read. I'm going to move my marker and let's use the rest of our time on 496 above the battleground. 496 above the battleground. Yeah. In the text, 496.
Oh goodness, I'm up.
Everybody want to go to heaven. Nobody want to go right now. Oh, yeah.
I don't think I've heard that country western one.
Can I start with paragraph one?
Yes, please. Above the battleground.
Okay.
And actually, would you start with paragraph 6 for us?
Sure.
Of the previous section.
Mistake not truce.
Yeah, mistake not.
Mistake not truce for peace.
If anybody here is dealing with a tough person in your life, okay, and you're just trying to get along, you're trying to course in miracles your way through peace around the whole thing, take a deep breath before you read this. It's got some ego busting about to happen.
It's a good thing I'm reading.
You don't have to think about it, you're just reading it.
Okay, here it comes.
Mistake not truce for peace, nor compromise for the escape from conflict. To be released from conflict means that it is over.
Period. Take a moment.
Oh, dear.
Take a breath. He's just telling you the truth, and he knows that you're trying to work your way around it with the ego. So he's calling you out.
The door is open. You have left the battleground.
That's when it's really over. Go ahead.
You have not lingered there in cowering hope that it will not return, because the guns are stilled an instant, and the fear that haunts the place of death is not apparent. There is no safety in a battleground. You can look down on it in safety from above and not be touched. But from within it, you can find no safety. Not one tree left still standing will shelter you. Not one illusion of protection stands against the faith and murder. Here stands the body, torn between the natural desire to communicate and the unnatural intent to murder and to die. Think you the form that murder takes can offer safety? Can guilt be absent from a battlefield?
Take just a moment here to look at that paragraph. I'm going to try to find a quote for you. Maybe we don't have time. I'll bring it up another time. Okay, so got to get honest here.
The permanent, the difference, right? Truce versus the conflict being over.
Yes.
Is like when you're kind of working... you're working your miracles, you're trying to show up differently in a relationship, but it kind of keeps surfacing the same issues. You haven't really fully released.
Yeah, you decide to not punish for something the person's actually guilty of. This is like a truce. You son of a beep, but I'm not gonna make a big deal over it. You shouldn't have done that, and you've harmed me. You're not really forgiving. So you're keeping the problem. It's a truce. If you don't do this, I won't do that. But if you do, the real battle is over when it no longer has power over you, even if they did do it.
Well, that would be the difference then. So a truce would be like, because I noticed there's a fine line for me in dealing with things that are sort of chronically on my mind that do not provide for peace. That what I crave is relief. Relief is more like a truce, as opposed to really, truly it being released.
Yeah, exactly, buddy. You got it.
But I'll chase it in all kinds of ways.
Yeah,
but
it's not released.
I'll chase it with addiction, like, you know, my love of pastry. I'll chase it with music, distraction.
Yep.
But it's just
the pastry,
truce.
The sugar is a drug like heroin. You know it. It's a drug that alters the mind. We call it sugar and it's sweet and funny and we can laugh about it, but it's not a laughing matter if you've really got this. It's just another drug. So you're back in the battleground with it, but to be really released is that freedom you felt earlier tonight. Thank you very much for sharing it so beautifully. That's how to get really away from the battle. And you can walk the razor's edge and be vigilant, and you can understand that you are not powerless. There is a power greater than that. And you have access to it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You know, I just took an anger management class because I was dealing with a prodigal son of Pharaoh's son of mine.
Yes.
Where I was stuck at was feeling guilty by not letting go.
Uh-huh.
I had to let go.
Woo! Mario!
I can't wait for that party.
Oh my God, yes. High five, fist bump.
You know, but I'm just saying, it's just that there's no coincidence what we seek and where we do what we do and yes. what I need to do.
Yes. And you took your training, Marine.
This is my food.
Amen, buddy.
Amen.
That's it. Well done. Well done, Mario.
No, it's just that, this is why I come here. I seek it, and it points me, and it drives me, it takes me.
No mistake. Oh, yeah. We're celebrating with you there. Keep it up. Good, good. Okay. Stephen, would you read for us paragraph 1 about the battleground? And by the way, the quote I was looking for is where the Corps says, this is a quote. What is not love is murder.
Whoa, that's a good one.
I told you this was a radical course, and it's a bit steep in its teaching. But that's it, really the two-sided coin, folks. There's either loss or there's gain. There's love or there's anything opposite of it. And you may as well go all the way to the worst of the opposite of love, murder. Because if love is true, and we're teaching love, and we're here to recognize love in everything, let's not pussyfoot around. If you're not loving, it's murdering. Murdering is intentional loss and removal. The opposite of loving, which is joining and growing.
And throughout the book, it constantly says there is no difference between a small...
Oh, man. All right. Teach us.
Versus a large.
Teach us.
It's all murder. In a sense, there's no
order, difficulty, and miracles. Miracle principle number one. He says, you know what? If it's not true, it's false.
Yeah.
If you're dealing with false, there's not something that's more false than another.
Mm-hmm. Murder is no different than stealing. Murder is no different than ignoring.
Any loss is loss.
Mm-hmm.
It's all sin.
It's all the idea of separation, that you can actually break off a piece of what is whole. Mm-hmm. It's right back down to the separation discussion. Really, it's binary. It's binary, which means one and zero. Mm-hmm. There aren't gradients. The ego would like to have a lot of gradients. You can hate this one, but don't hate that one. Of course, says no. Hate means no love. To really hate, if you're going to do hate right, do it right. I mean, hate them all the way. Get some real satisfaction.
That's when those religious groups back east, mostly back east, say, I forgive whoever murdered somebody in their community.
Yeah.
What they're saying is it's not any different than anything else that could happen.
That's right.
It's not any different than if somebody walked on your lawn.
That's right. They understood the essence of forgiveness, which is, are you going to carry this burden or not? You're going to carry it if you decide you're going to carry it. How do you want to live? How do you want to live? Do you want to be free? Do you want to be happy? No, I want to carry a grudge for a long time because it feels better. It doesn't feel better. It feels like a grudge.
It's all about forgiveness.
It is all about forgiveness. Amen, Mary. Okay, let's continue.
Do you remember? Did you notice?
I'm working it.
Above the battleground. Do not remain in conflict, for there is no war without attack. The fear of God is fear of life and not of death. Yet he remains the only place of safety. In him is no attack, and no illusion in any form stalks heaven. Heaven is wholly true. No difference enters in what is all the same cannot conflict. You are not asked to fight against your wish to murder. But you are asked to realize the form it takes conceals the same intent. And it is this you fear and not the form. What is not love is murder.
Well, that's why I couldn't find it. It was right there on the same page.
And not loving must be an attack. Every illusion is an assault on truth, and everyone does violence to the idea of love. Because it seems to be of equal truth.
seems to be of equal truth to love when it does violence. Oh my God, this twisted web we weave. Let's try to pull another paragraph off if we can. Kim?
What can be equal to the truth yet different? Murder and love are incompatible. Yet if they both are true, then must they be the same and indistinguishable from one another. So will they be to those who see God's Son a body. For it is not a body like it is not a body that is like the Son's creator. And what is lifeless cannot be the Son of life. How can a body be extended to hold the universe? Can it create and be what it creates? Can it offer its creations all that it is and never suffer loss?
Are you? Number three.
God does not share his function with a body. he gave the function to create unto his Son because it is his own. It is not sinful to believe the function of the Son is murder, but it is insanity.
It's not sinful, but it is insane.
What is the same can have no different function. Creation is the means for God's extension, and what is his must be this, his Son as well. Either the Father and the Son are murderers, or neither is. Life makes not death, creating like itself.
Beautiful. Thank you. Life makes not death. Life makes not death. Life should be capitalized, which it is being a sentence. Creating like itself. All right, let's have a circle. Okay, this is a moment of honesty, folks. Time to call yourself out for the rest of the night and tomorrow if you can, but at least on the way home. Just kind of make the decision out loud to yourself. Now, each thought that you have, it's a miracle or a grievance. It's love or it's murder. Oh. Please get honest with yourself. As Brother John was saying, as in his coming out of meditation, he says, you know what? It's either gain or it's loss. If you didn't believe in loss, then everything you did would be a gain. You would just see the gain. And then the gift is received. But if you believe in loss, there's no gift. There's just a loss. But if you're looking for love, there's a gain. Thank you very much. And it is love. Now, I told you this is a radical book. It's steep, okay? There are gentler ways. It all leads to the same place, which is you are love. You will not rest until you resume your awareness of that. So recognize if you're not feeling happy, you chose murder. It's not that you didn't choose to love, you actually chose to murder. You chose to break something down and kill it. You sure killed your happiness. I know you did that. You killed the next moment. You killed a smile. I know you did that. That's what you're murdering. You're murdering a smile needlessly. You can choose love. It's your most natural thing. And you know what? And I'll close on this. I'll just tell you. The way you choose love is don't do anything else. Just don't do anything else. And love fills in the space. Honestly, just be still and let the smile show up. Thank you, thank you. Amen.
Thank you.
Check the mirror.
I'm not. He's like.